The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
John Paul Phelan, Fine Gael TD for Carlow Kilkenny, my guest this week for the Thursday interview. John Paul, how are you?
I'm good, Kieran. Thank you.
So outgoing Fine Gael TD is how I should have described you. You were telling me during the break, put all your money on the 15th of November.
He said I did not.
That's like absolutely when it's happening.
I hope it's on the 15th of November. And I've certainly told the Taoiseach what my preference is, but I have no inside information.
Why would your preference be November rather than, say, January, February?
Because we've had the last three elections have been January, February, like campaigning in January, election early February. People just don't want to see anyone, never mind politicians, knocking on their doors in that time of the year. It's a miserable time of the year anyway. It's cold. It's dark. I just think having it Simon Harris putting us all out of our misery and having it sooner rather than later would be the best thing for everyone, like not just from a political point of view, but for the voters' point of view as well.
Will you miss it? Campaigning for an election?
I miss the campaigning an awful lot. Like, campaigning is great because you really never know, you know, what you're going to meet or what the issues or topics are going to be. And 99% of people are nice, like, and are even ones that don't agree with you are not going to vote for you are pleasant on the doors. Social media is a different ballgame, mind you, but the campaigning, definitely. I was talking to another one of my colleagues who's retiring, and I was saying about how much I'd missed the election. They were saying, God, I always hated elections. But, I always got a kind of a buzz out of elections.
Will you still be on the campaign trail?
I will a bit. Yeah, I will a bit. Like, as it happens, my replacement for Fine Gael and South Kilkenny is a man called Councillor Michael Doyle from Inistig, who I went to school with in Good Council in New Ross. And like, that first Monday in September 1991, after Tipperary had beaten us in the All-Ireland the day before, was the day that I met Michael in secondary school. So I'll certainly give him a dig out. David Fitzgerald and Catherine Callaghan are the other candidates, and I'll do my bit for them.
I think I hurled against Michael Doyle.
You did? Good hurler too.
Quite a few times, actually. Yeah. He would have hurled with the Roaring Stig. Mm. So the social media experience then, you mentioned that there. Mm. Is that the type of thing that you were able to ignore to an extent?
It was, because I'm not the most technical person. You know, I'm not really into the latest mod cons of anything. Like, I was thinking today before I came in about when I started in politics in 1999, I was a student at WIT. I was 20 years of age. I bought a mobile phone after I was elected, and I was the first of my friends to have a mobile phone. So when you talk to younger people and younger politicians now, they just really don't understand that there was a time before it. I largely ignored social media in terms of the abuse factor. Use it as a platform to put out information about what was going on in the constituency or what I was up to. But in terms of engaging with abuse, no, I mostly ignored that. And I mean, I would encourage my family just to ignore it, because it affects them probably more than the politician.
But we'll say the experience that, say, Simon Harris and others would have had, Stephen Donnelly, in recent months, whereby there were protests outside their home. Now, you never had that. But when that happened, was it something that kind of had an impact on you, conscious of your family and a young family, young baby?
Absolutely. Like, well, I know Simon and his wife and their little children very well. Like, and I know the others too, but to think that there are people who are prepared to do that, like, this has become, it's a relatively new phenomenon. It started in Irish politics around the time of the water charges protests, which were particularly vicious in this constituency, because Phil Hogan was the minister at the time, and I remember driving into a Fine Gael meeting in Loughlin Bridge in the Lord Bagnell, and, you know, cars getting kicked from people who were protesting. But that was at a meeting. Protesting at somebody's house is a different ballgame. But I hate to say it, but you know, we have practitioners of politics, mostly on the hard left in Ireland, who would be the first ones to advocate for many, many years the politics of protest. And I often wonder, particularly about Paul Murphy. He's one of the people who was protest outside his house, and he's got a small child. Shouldn't happen. But he wasn't saying that when he was blocking Joan Burton in Talla a few years ago at the height of the water practice, and he was leading the kind of charge of that campaign.
But is that not comparable to the water charges at the meeting, you say, rather than the protest at the home? He would say they're two different things.
Yeah, well, I'd still think, you know, stopping somebody from leaving an event in a car is a different thing than kicking their car. Now, neither of them are right, by the way. But, you know, halting someone from going about their business, it's all wrong. And whether that's at their home or any place else, it just shouldn't happen.
Is one of the impacts of all of this is that it makes it less an attractive a gig, doesn't it, to younger people?
I think it does. But you still kind of have to. We had a bit of this today. New councillor for Fine Gael in this constituency, Ben Ward, student in UCD. He contacted me today about, you know, he got his first anonymous letter. Now, I was trying to lighten the mood, I suppose, a little bit by saying that, you know, he should nearly have a box. I have a box at home where I have all of my anonymous letters that I've received over the years, and I give myself a good laugh every now and again by going back over, because I can nearly identify most of the people who've written them. That's why I decided to keep them. Like, would I be able to? But, like, he's a 20-year-old student and he's getting this, and he's like, it's bound to affect him. Mm. But I was kind of, first of all, you're obviously doing something right if you're annoying somebody enough that they're willing to put pen to paper or willing to plug in a printer to send a cowardly, anonymous, spiteful kind of letter towards you. I said, you know, just keep it up. This is what you're supposed to do. It's easy to say that after 25 years. More difficult when you've only been a counsellor for a couple of months. But
and what was the nature of the complaint in that letter? Was it like, was it kind of a party position? Was it something he was involved
with? It was something he was involved in. Okay. Like, it was actually very, like, I've seen, and I've got some of them over the years, you know, letters that threaten. There was no threat implied in the letter. It was just someone who was just particularly angry, and I don't really know why. But that definitely will affect people. But I mean, as long as they have somebody there to kind of talk them through it. And I spent a lot of the day kind of texting over and back to Ben to make sure that he, you know, this is something that you will happen. But it's happening because you're actually doing something. Like politicians who never take a position or on anything, of which there's a large number, will I would suspect rarely get an anonymous letter or anything. You know, keep doing what you're at.
Has the nature of the job changed? Set aside all that, the kind of toxicity online and everything, the day-to-day stuff. I mean, how you would have described the job on a kind of a job spec when you started compared to today?
It has changed in that I think elected representatives, either at local or national level, have less of an immediate impact on maybe decision making now than we would have had 25 years ago. Like, we have designed a system of government, both at local and national level in Ireland, that has removed the politicians maybe from a chunk of the decisions, particularly at local level, but to an extent also at national level. So, I mean, I think that, so the satisfaction that you get from actually achieving something. Like, I remember 20 years ago, Seamus Brennan, God rest him, was the Minister for Social Protection, and he changed the law. There was a few of us lobbying him on pension entitlements for the spouses of self-employed. And, like, it was a small thing, but it was a huge thing, but we were able to influence him to do it. I'd often wonder now, like, if I was in an NGO, would I have more influence on some of the decisions that can be made by government departments than being an elected representative?
And part of the reason we've designed that system is because we had bad experiences around planning and everything. Yeah. And, you know, politicians were seen arguably as maybe more corruptible. Did we go too far, though? Does it make the decision-making process, is there that kind of, what do they describe it as, a democratic deficit? It's more removed from the people.
It is more removed from the people. I think we did go too far. I understand why we did it.
Yeah.
And it was a swing back against some of the corruption that we had seen. But I think we have gone too far. Look at planning, for example. Take planning as a classic example where, and obviously that was where most of the corruption that was exposed centred upon. But now we have local councils. One of the powers that local councils still have is to zone land for development. But we have targets being imposed by the department centrally and by the planning regulator centrally, which would actually mean, for instance, in a rural local authority area like Kilkenny, that you might only have 150 rural houses being able to be built in a particular year because there's a limit set on the number of on the amount of land that can be zoned for housing, which imposes an artificial kind of restriction. And like, a lot of the changes that we've made with regard to housing were very necessary in terms of standards, but if you impose huge extra standards, you're going to impose huge extra costs, and we've never really had that discussion, like, again, look at the hospitality sector at the moment. There's a large lobby on to look at reducing the VAT rate again. But government in the last few years have made changes, whether it was like changes that were positive about sick pay, changes about auto enrollment for pensions. But we've never really had a discussion about who's going to pay for it. And ultimately, it's the cost of the product that's being produced that goes up. And that leads to inflation and all sorts of other impacts on people who are trying to get it. And we were talking about food prices earlier on. Food is ironically a bit different. Like, we had depressed food prices for years.
Yeah.
And now they're starting to resemble a true price.
Is the system too centralised in this country? Should local authorities have more power?
Well, it's one of the things that I will look back on my political career was the introduction of directly elected mayor, and Limerick has just had one.
Yeah.
That's because the county manager, who's now called, or the city manager, the chief executive, ultimately they have 90% of the power of local government.
Mm.
And many of their decisions aren't scrutinised. Now, we're lucky in Ireland by and large, with one or two notable exceptions. We've had very good people in those positions.
Yeah.
But, if we're truly to have a democratic system of local government, then those key decisions have to be influenced by people's vote in a ballot box, I think. And that's why having a directly elected mayor is an attempt to, I suppose, really rebalance that imbalance that exists at local authority level at present. But we should also, by the way, have a rebalance of councillors' power. But that was the area I was a Minister of State in. And I can remember meeting the councillor representative group on a number of occasions in my time in office. And I asked them each time, you think they'd have learned at some stage, what extra powers they wanted. And I was never presented with an extra power that councillors wanted, which I found remarkable as somebody who had come up through local government here in Kilkenny. Mm-hmm. And there are obvious things like childcare and things that have developed in the last 20 years where local government really should be the driver. But that wasn't sought by the representatives, at least, of councillors.
What are you going to do after?
Yeah,
after the 15th of November.
Well, I'm busy anyway, in the sense that I got re-involved, I suppose, in local voluntary stuff that my family had been involved in for years. Like, I'm the chairman of Tulliver Ross Burke and J Club.
New pitch,
and All Ireland Junior Hurling Champions, and doing quite well in the intermediate. So part of the country you know well, of course. But that's a busy job. I'm going to go back to college, actually. I wasn't going to say it, but I haven't discussed it yet, and I actually haven't been accepted for a place yet.
Oh, right.
So I better not.
Lobbying live on the radio.
No, listening. I won't name the institution, but it's just a part-time course. But
okay, what is it? What's your area?
It's counselling and that kind of area, counselling for
okay.
addiction and for, you know, other issues that people have. Yeah.
And is that something you've always had an interest in?
It is. Well, see, I'm somebody who needs people. Like, I feed off people. I love people's stories. Everyone has a dozen stories, never mind one story. So I figured that I had to, like, I didn't want to be a lobbyist. God, I hate the idea of even thinking about becoming a lobbyist. And so many retired politicians do. And I just thought, you know, I like talking to people and they usually like talking to me. So, I can't do politics anymore, so I do something that's close to that.
And listen, before I let you go, then, how's the health? Because, you know, people would be aware of the health scare back at the height of COVID.
Yeah. The glorious 12th in 2020, I had a 100% blockage of the left anterior descending, the LAD artery, which, I had complications afterwards. I had a minor stroke the day afterwards, so my health is very good considering I'm on trays of medication. I used to laugh at my late father when he had a tray. I've had a tray for the last 4 years. I still have issues, and I still have, in particular around blood pressure, I have chronically low blood pressure, which a lot of the medication for the heart has the effect of lowering blood pressure. So I had an incident last year, a blackout, which led to 3 or 4 broken ribs, which is a painful thing. So, look, it's very good. And our 16-month-old Garrett keeps me on my toes, keeps me young at heart, at least. So myself and Claire and Garrett are looking forward to a different future. But I'll always be, you know, involved to some extent in politics. I mean, it is an addiction itself. You know, I'm well and truly hooked.
Well, listen, we wish you and Claire and Garrett, all the best in that future.
Thanks a million
for joining us here on the show.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.